Shivaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13, The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Today we're doing text 8 and 9. It's a combined verse. You know, it's not two separate verses. So we'll only the second part is written up there, but we'll also have to do them both together. So please repeat: Atmanam, Brahma. Nirvanam Pratyashtamita Vigraha Avabodha Rasaikatmyam Anandam Anusantatam Avyavachchina Yogagni Dagda Karma Malashayaha Swarupam Avarundano Natmano Anyam Tadaita. So it's going to be difficult doing the first part because it's not there, but we can try. Atmanam Brahma Nirvanam. Atmanam Brahma Nirvanam. Pratyastamita Vigraham. Pratyastamita Vigraham. Avabodha Rasaikatmyam. Avabodha Rasaikatmyam. Anandam Anusantatam. Sanusantatam. Avyavachchina yogagni, avyavachchina yogagni, dagda karma malashayaha, sarupam avarundano, natmanonyam tadaikshata, atmanam brahma nirvanam, Pratyastamita Vigraham Avabodha Rasaikatmyam Anandam Anusantatam Avyavachchina Yogagni Dagda Karma Malashayaha Sarupam avarundano Natmanonyam taraikshata Atmanam brahma nirvanam Pratyastamita vigraham Avabodha rasaik atmyam Anandam anusantatam Avyavachchina yogagni Dagda karma malashaya Sarupam avarundano Natmanonyam taraikshata. So I guess you could just chant the second part there. Avyavachchina yogagni Dagda karma malashaya Sarupam avarundano Natmanotyam tadaikshata Avyavachchina yogagni Dagda karma malashaya Sarupam avarundano. Vyavachita Avyavachina Yogadni Lakshaya Udaro Kudaichita Shina Yogadni Dana Kama Malashaya Dana Garudana Vaishnavis Vaishnavis Yogadni Dana Malashaya Atmanam, self. Brahma, spirit. Nirvanam, extinction of material existence. Pratyastamita, ceased. Vigraham, separation. Avabodha rasa, by the mellow of knowledge. Ekaatmyam, oneness. Anandam, bliss. Anusantatam, expanded. Avyavachina, continuous. Yoga, by practice of yoga. Agni, by the fire. Dagda, burned. Karma, fruit of desires. Mala, dirty. Ashayaha, in his mind. Swarupam, constitutional position. Avarundana, realizing. Na, not. Atmanaha, than the Supreme Soul. Anyam, anything else. Tada, then. Aikshata, saw. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. So this is a description of Utkala, you know, son of Dhruva Maharaj. Please repeat. By expansion of his knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, he had already attained liberation from the bondage of the body. This liberation is known as Nirvana. He was situated in transcendental bliss, and he continued always in that blissful existence, which expanded more and more. This was possible for him by continual practice of bhakti yoga, which is compared to fire because it burns away all dirty material things. He was situated in his constitutional position of self-realization, and he could not see anything else but the Supreme Lord and himself engaged in discharging devotional service. Purport. These two verses explain the verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 54. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati Samasarvesha Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he achieves pure devotional service unto me. End quote. This is also explained by Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshashtika in the beginning of the first verse. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava maha devagni nirvapanam shreya kairava chandrika vitaranam vidyavadu jivanam. The bhakti yoga system is the topmost yoga system, and in this system, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the foremost performance of devotional service. By chanting the holy name, one can attain the perfection of nirvana, or liberation from material existence, and so increase one's blissful life of spiritual existence, as described by Lord Chaitanya, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. When one is situated in that position, he no longer has any interest in material opulence or even a royal throne and sovereignty over the whole planet. This situation is called viraktir anyatra syat. It is the result of devotional service. The more one makes advancement in devotional service, the more one becomes detached from material opulence and material activity. This is the spiritual nature full of bliss. This is also described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 59, Param Drisva Nivartate. One ceases to take part in material enjoyment upon tasting superior blissful life and spiritual existence. By advancement in spiritual knowledge, which is considered to be like blazing fire, all material desires are burned to ashes. The perfection of mystic yoga is possible when one is continually in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by discharging devotional service. A devotee is always thinking of the Supreme Person at every step of life. Every conditioned soul is full of the reactions of his past life, but all dirty things are immediately burned to ashes if one simply executes devotional service. This is described in the Narada Pancharatra, Sarva Padi Vinir Muktan Paratvena Niramalam. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this verse and purport, we are learning how pure devotees become, how they are, you know, free from material desires. Anya bilashita shunyam gyana karmadhyanavartam anukriyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttamam. So this pure devotional service is characterized by being without any desire other than, you know, the desire to please Krishna, to love, you know, Krishna. So anya bilashita shunyam, other desires are absent, you know, in the heart of pure devotees. So one cannot immediately come to that stage, or it's very difficult anyways. So on the one hand, you know, we have the position of the conditioned soul being completely absorbed in material desires and with no thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then on the other hand, we have the position of pure devotional service, where the only desire is to please Krishna and to love Krishna. And there's an intermediate stage, which we find ourselves in, where we still may have some material desires, while at the same time we have some desire to please Krishna, Krishna's representative. And if we perform devotional service in the right way, then gradually the material desires will decrease and the pure desire to serve Krishna, Krishna's devotees, will become dominant. So we're all in that intermediate stage, so we have to constantly be taking inventory of the state of our desires, what our love objects are. there was back in the 50s one rock and roll singer, Bo Diddley, he had a song, "Who Do You Love?" So we have to be thinking, well, who do we love? And usually in the material world, we love ourselves, above all others. we judge, everything, by the standard. Does it please me or not please me? So it's difficult sometimes, to make the transition. When we're still in that intermediate stage, when to some extent we are still concerned about our own hopes and desires and aspirations, and at the same time we are trying to fulfill the hopes and aspirations of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, the spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master. So then Krishna makes an arrangement that if we fulfill our desires in the way that he specifies, then that can be part of devotional service. So it's not that we're asked to extinguish our desires, but simply they have to be engaged in the proper way. Janmadyasya yataha. Actually, everything comes from Krishna. So our desires, they actually have an origin on the spiritual level of reality, but they become perverted. They become misdirected. And so we have to learn how to redirect those desires. And that's the business of the spiritual master, the pure devotee, to help us redirect those desires. So what kind of desires do we have? On a very basic level, we have a desire to eat. We have a desire to sleep. We have a desire, we have sex desire, desire to connect ourselves somehow or other with some man, some woman. we have a desire to defend ourselves, either physically against attack or psychologically. We have our false egos, that we constantly want to defend. So those are desires that we have, and every day we're confronted with them. Every day we find ourselves wanting to eat something. Every day we find ourselves confronted with the desire to go to sleep. We find ourselves, confronted with, attraction to the opposite sex, the same sex, whatever it may happen to be. We have, desire to defend ourselves in different situations. Or, these things can also be, extended, to defend, my family or somebody else that I love, or defend my country or society or class or friends or whatever. So we have these desires that are there, either for ourselves individually or for those who are connected with us in some way that we feel some connection with. And then there's a whole range of more, subtle desires for, profit, adoration, distinction. We want to, accumulate some wealth, so that we have some position in society, so that we're able to satisfy our desires to the extent, that we want. We want respect from others. That's another song, by another blues singer. Respect. Aretha Franklin. Respect. We want respect. So, so we have all of these desires, and before we come to devotional service, we're very much entangled in trying to satisfy all of these desires, and somehow or other we become frustrated. See, one thing is that these, there's actually a whole stockpile of desires in the heart. This is described later in the fourth canto. That actually lifetime after lifetime we're storing up, all of these desires. And actually we can see that even in one lifetime, even in an hour or two, we feel so many desires. They're more than we can possibly satisfy in one life. And we just have unlimited desires. So they get stored up in the heart, in the subtle body. And the desires, they just get expressed, lifetime, after lifetime. I mean, we may think, well, we're constantly coming up with, new desires, like, I want this, I want that. But what's really happening is that the stockpile of desires that we've accumulated, they just keep coming out. The desires just keep coming out, coming out, coming out, one lifetime after another. It's interesting, later in the fourth canto, it's explained that sometimes the devotees of the Lord are actually able to see, the whole stockpile all at once and kind of get rid of it. So we actually want to come to that position. We all know it. We say, well, yes, we have to become free from material desires, but what does that actually mean? There's, to say it in theory is one thing, but to be, dealing with these things every day, day in and day out, is another thing. How to deal with them. So, eating. Well, we have to learn how to control, our eating. Devotees, we take prasadam. At regulated times, just what we need, to keep the body and soul together. That's, ideal. Of course, it takes, maybe a long time to realize that, that's quite important, to do everything in moderation, not, overeat. Although, one does have to be careful because there are two ways to go wrong in terms of desires. One is, to artificially renounce things that shouldn't be renounced, and the other is to just overindulge oneself. So it can take just years and years and years. I mean, just to figure out eating. Does anybody have a problem with eating? Has everybody got that one solved? How much to eat, when to eat, what to eat? If you do, I'll take lessons from you. But, you know, so that's something, you know, that we constantly have to deal with. You know, there's always the, you know, the temptation there to eat things that aren't really prasadam, or to eat too much, or eat at the wrong time, and then we feel some, we feel indisposed or not, don't feel properly. And then sleeping, I mean, the desire to sleep is there, and I think that's something that we all struggle with. That's another desire. But in bhakti yoga, we're meant to control, you know, the sleeping, you know, desire. We try to be regulated, you know, getting up for mangal arati, and, you know, trying to control the sleep desire. And actually, that was one of Arjuna's name, the conqueror of sleep. So we want to do that. And then, but as far as all these desires go, it's they're not meant to be extinguished. I mean, they're meant to be engaged. I mean, there's the, you know, Srila Prabhupada said in one of his purports to the Bhagavatam, you know, 1.9.23, devotional service to the Lord does not kill the material desires of the living beings, but they are applied in the right cause of devotional service. And this qualifies the desire to be transferred to the spiritual sky. So we don't try to kill our material desires, as Srila Prabhupada said here. We try to engage them in, you know, the right cause. The other thing that we struggle with, you know, daily is the mating tendency, you know, the tendency to be attracted, you know, to the opposite sex. And that has to be dealt with, you know, according to, you know, one's position. But it's not that that can be suppressed, because really, you know, the tendency to love somebody, so-called, that again has its root in Krishna and the spiritual level of reality. The tendency to have, you know, relationships is there, loving relationships in different modes. It's there. It's part of spiritual reality. It's reflected in this world too. In, you know, devotional service, you know, these things have to be, you know, done in the way that, you know, Krishna prescribes. And then it becomes a source of liberation, a source of advancement in, you know, spiritual consciousness. And, you know, material life, you know, the tendency to mate, to marry is there. But it's done, you know, for, you know, a different motive. I mean, just purely, you know, for selfish motives. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in one of his, you know, purports that a faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari are a good combination for the advancement of the human mission in life. He said, yes, there should be marriage, but the best combination is a woman who's been trained to be chaste and a husband who's been trained in, you know, brahmachari life, you know, proper brahmachari life. He says, their combination can be very good for them and for others. This is something, that we all struggle with. Of course, the ideal is there, but we see in modern society. Actually, there was one movie star who once said, a girl should marry for love and keep marrying until she finds it. But the devotees, they're looking for love in a different way. They see, if a devotee couple is married, well, they try to put Krishna in the center and, serve, Krishna together. But as I said, this is something that, devotees have to struggle with day in and, day out. So there's the tendency to, defend. I said we, in devotional service, we may, find that, we want to, defend our false ego. And actually, it's good to try to keep oneself well situated in devotional service. I mean, people want recognition. That this is one thing. People, they, in material life, they join, because people are always engaged with other people. They're engaged in society. They go to school. They become employed in businesses. And then what do they want? Well, they want recognition. They want to be recognized for some accomplishment or achievement or appreciated. And that appreciation is shown in different ways, in material life, by, advancement through the ranks of the military or, in a business organization or something. People want, recognition. They want to be able to display their talents and things like that. These are, desires that, people have. So in devotional service, the same thing, can be there. I mean, maybe the ideal thing is just to be, lower than the straw in the street and more humble than a blade of grass. But in the beginning, we may still feel some desire that, yes, we want to show that we can do something. We want to get the attention of others in some way. So we can do that. I mean, that can be dovetailed in devotional service. We can try to excel in some aspect of devotional service. And in that way, get the attention of the people that we want to recognize us. And eventually, by doing all these things, in a way that's dovetailed in Krishna's service, then the material desires gradually go away. Krishna's like a very, Krishna says of gamblers, I'm the cheat. So Krishna can see, okay, this devotee, wants something, wants to serve me, wants to be part of the society of devotees, but still has some desire. So Krishna kind of deals us a hand where we're more or less forced to give up our material desires and accept a more devotional attitude as we go on and on in devotional service. And this actually comes, it's not something that we can do ourselves, really. It depends on the grace of Krishna, really. That's, Krishna's mercy. By Krishna's mercy, we're able to give up our material desires and gradually become more and more attached to the spiritual desires that we have. So anyways, I'll stop there. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes?
Thank you for a very enlightening class, Prabhu. My question is that you were saying how disciple has material desires and the spiritual master is expert in engaging that disciple in such a way to engage that those desires in Krishna's devotional service and the disciple becomes purified. So my question is, how does the spiritual master conduct his service of engaging the disciple according to his desires? How does a spiritual master, how is he expert, and what techniques or ways does he use to understand those desires, and what is his expertise in engaging those desires in Krishna's devotional service so disciple can become purified?
Of course, when we say spiritual master, I mean, we have to have a broad understanding of what that means. Tandara Charana Sevi Bhakta Sani Vas. You know, we serve the spiritual master in the society of devotees. So within the society of devotees, you know, we may have spiritual masters who are instructing spiritual masters, initiating spiritual masters, Vartma Pradarshika gurus who show us initially the path to devotional service. So we have many guides in our spiritual life. In some cases, it may be primarily the initiating spiritual master. In other cases, it may not be, or it may be some combination or whatever. But still, ultimately, if somebody is a spiritual master of one kind or another in our society, either an instructing spiritual master, an authority, a spiritual authority, an initiating spiritual master, the reason they should have those positions is because they have satisfied their spiritual masters, our founder Acharya. You know, somehow or other, they have to be in those positions because they are following the policies, you know, set, you know, by, you know, our, you know, founder Acharya, and are conducting their lives according to his instructions. And if that's going on, then Krishna gives the intelligence. Tesham sadata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvikam didami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So that means for those who are serving Krishna sincerely, Krishna gives the intelligence, you know, how to do these things. And without that, without Krishna actually giving the intelligence, the whole thing just falls apart. It's no different than, you know, material society, really. So then, for those who are materialistic, completely materialistic, Krishna doesn't give spiritual intelligence like that. He just simply looks at their, you know, he looks at them and, you know, just sees, you know, upadrasta anumantas cha. Okay, you're doing this, here's your karma, and that's it. But for those who are trying to serve Krishna, say, if, and we assume that our spiritual leaders, our spiritual authorities, they're trying to serve, you know, Krishna within the bounds that have been established by our founder Acharya, who set up the Society of Devotees. If they're doing that, if they're properly fulfilling their roles in the society, then perhaps even if they themselves aren't, you know, perfectly, you know, 100% Maha Bhagavata Uttama Adhikaris, still they're being purified, their disciples, followers, you know, in the temples and other aspects of our society, they're becoming purified. So that's the principle. And then how, you know, Krishna actually in each particular individual case, you know, gives, you know, devotees intelligence, I mean, that's something that can be discuss, but the general principle is that Krishna, if somebody is properly situated in devotional service, Krishna will give them the intelligence how to properly carry out that service. Yes, Sura?
I think we should be careful that the last few days we've been talking that the spiritual master engages one in devotional service. In a practical way, we have to be very careful to understand in Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON society, Prabhupada is engaging everyone as the Shiksha Guru. When there's a Diksha Guru or different types of gurus, they have no jurisdiction. We should be very careful to clearly understand Diksha Guru makes sure the disciple is chanting 16 rounds, following four regular principles, and engaged in some service within Srila Prabhupada's society. But what chaos it would be, and we've seen it, if a Diksha Guru would decide that I want to engage my disciple like this, I want to engage my disciple like that, I want to engage my disciple like this. Devotees are made in a particular temple. Srila Prabhupada's program is that they work under the temple authorities. That's their little s Shiksha Guru, the temple authority, the GBC. And then they get initiated by some guru who tries to help them spiritually. But their practical service and the service that they're being given is actually transcendentally being given by everyone's Shiksha Guru, Srila Prabhupada. We have to understand that. And under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada's local authorities where they're working under, that it isn't some free-for-all where, oh, I'd like this guru, and all of a sudden this Diksha Guru says, okay, everybody leave the temple, go get a job in the material world, and just work for me. We've seen it in the past, and what chaos this kind of a diversion created. So when we're talking about the spiritual master engaging the disciple, we should be very careful not to misunderstand and not to have it be open end. Srila Prabhupada clearly gave us all of the indications how it's supposed to be.
Yes, well, that's why I said Tandra Charana Sevi Bhakti Sani Vas. One serves the Guru in the society of devotees, and our society of devotees, it was created by, you know, Srila Prabhupada. And that's why I mentioned also that we have to have a broad concept of what it means, spiritual master, not just, you know, the initiating spiritual master, but the spiritual authorities, you know, by which I meant, you know, GBCs and temple presidents and other authorities in our movement, and instructing spiritual masters that one may have. So yes, it's not a simple thing. It has to be properly understood. And as I said, everyone has to be properly situated in their relationship to our founder, Acharya, yes. Anything else? Swavas.
Well, I'd just like to ask, what if there is a conflict in that system, meaning that sometimes the temple president may not agree with the spiritual master, the guru? What is the resolve? What action should the temple president take, or the authority, if the spiritual master is suggesting that someone leave a temple, go get a job? What is the recourse of the temple president?
Well, yes. Well, you know, Srila Prabhupada did establish, you know, a system of management. He said, well, the governing body commission is the ultimate managing authority in our society. And he had devotees over the years, you know, those that ultimate authority that he set up has considered, you know, these questions, because actually it's a very important question, the different lines of authority in our movement. So the way that Srila Prabhupada's management system has decided this particular question is that in our society, it's a GBC law that a spiritual master is not allowed to independently change the service or the ashram status of a disciple without taking into consideration the authorities under which that disciple is working. You know, the temple president, if it's a temple devotee, or some other. So that's an established ISKCON law. And it's not, you know, sometimes when we hear about, okay, laws, you know, they seem like, oh, it's just some, you know, institutional this or that or the other, some political thing. But actually these are items of Vaishnav etiquette. And I've just been reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, Lord Chaitanya, who's telling Sanatana Goswami, okay, I want you to write a book, you know, where you establish, you know, principles of Vaishnav etiquette, how the deity should worship, how devotees should relate to each other. So these things are part of spiritual life. You know, the devotees have to understand there are principles, you know, by which other devotees relate to other devotees in a society of devotees. And Lord Chaitanya said such principles should be, you know, established. So, you know, that's one of the functions of the leadership of the Society of Devotees that, you know, Srila Prabhupada set up, is they have to come up with principles of etiquette, you know, for how different devotees in our society should relate to each other. So on that particular question, the decision that they've come up with is that temple presidents are also spiritual authorities, and an initiating spiritual master operating in a society of devotees like ours cannot just independently make, you know, those kinds of decisions. So in a particular case, say if it's a temple president, then the temple president will just have to, you know, decide. I mean, it's just sort of like in the material world, nothing's a case unless somebody decides to make it a case. So if somebody wants to make a case of something under GBC law, then they would have that. You know, say if a temple president felt, you know, that a spiritual master had violated that particular item of etiquette, Vaishnav etiquette, then I think there are a lot of options. One could talk with the spiritual master himself and see what he had to say about it, or if that's probably always a good first step. And then if it appears that there's something that's going on that's in violation of the principles of Vaishnav etiquette that have been established in our society, then, you know, one could go to the authorities that are there to deal with those things, and in this case, GBC. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.